In the sun-drenched hills of Palestine, 17-year-old Isra prepares for a life she barely understands. As she kneads dough in her mother's kitchen, the scent of za'atar filling the air, an American-Palestinian family arrives seeking a bride for their son, Adam. America represents both promise and uncertainty, a place of potential freedom, yet fraught with challenges for someone raised to believe that a woman's worth lies solely in her ability to bear sons and maintain a home. When Isra arrives in Brooklyn after her arranged marriage, she discovers that crossing oceans doesn't free you from cultural chains. The basement windows of her new home offer tantalizingly small glimpses of a world just beyond reach, much like the freedom she yearns for but cannot grasp. What happens when the traditions meant to preserve identity become the very things that silence half a community? This question echoes through the lives of three generations of Palestinian American women as they navigate the complex terrain between honoring their heritage and claiming their own voices. Their stories reveal how trauma passes silently from mother to daughter, and how the courage to break this cycle requires more than just dreams of a different life. The novel's characters carry generational wounds that create seemingly unbreakable behavioral patterns. Farida, Isra's mother-in-law, lost twin daughters in a Palestinian refugee camp after feeding them contaminated milk. This unprocessed grief manifests as cruelty toward her daughters-in-law, especially when they bear girls. "A woman is no man," she repeatedly tells her granddaughters, embedding the same sense of worthlessness she internalized. The men carry burdens too. Khaled's alcoholism and violence partly stem from displacement after the Nakba, while his son Adam inherits these destructive patterns. When Isra suggests her daughters might have choices beyond early marriage, Adam erupts, accusing her of becoming too American. Fear of cultural erosion becomes a weapon to maintain control. Haven't we all seen how unhealed wounds lead us to hurt those we claim to protect? This family shows how trauma, when buried rather than confronted, transforms into new suffering with each generation. For women under constant surveillance, books become portals to possibility. Sarah's introduction of reading to Isra offers more than entertainment. It's a lifeline. Through novels, Isra discovers alternatives to narratives of female submission and sacrifice. Reading becomes her hidden rebellion, concealed from Adam's disapproval. "It's the loneliest people who love books the most," Sarah tells Dea, recognizing how literature companions the isolated. Books and Beans, where Sarah becomes manager after escaping family constraints, transforms into a sanctuary where she mentors her niece, continuing the tradition of literary liberation. This awakening powerfully contrasts with official narratives. Brother Hakim's teachings that heaven lies under a mother's feet ring hollow to Dea after learning about her mother's abuse and murder. Books offer honest perspectives, creating space to question what has been presented as unquestionable truth. Isn't it remarkable how stories can save us when nothing else can? A single book can plant the seed of possibility in barren soil. "Silence will save us," Isra's mother tells her before leaving Palestine, advice passed through generations as supposed wisdom. Women are taught that voicing complaints invites punishment, that submission is safer than speaking up. Yet the narrative dismantles this belief. Silence doesn't save Isra, it isolates her, cutting her off from support and trapping her with an increasingly violent husband. Hannah's murder by her husband after requesting a divorce becomes pivotal. When Sarah cries that Hannah was only 18 and that could have been me, she exposes the terrifying truth that even perfect obedience offers no safety in a system built on control. The novel opens, "I was born without a voice in Brooklyn, New York, not literally mute, but silenced by my gender." This establishes voicelessness as both metaphorical condition and literal danger. The story proves that silence will save us is false. Only by breaking silence, by telling these dangerous stories, can real change occur. When Isra gives birth to Daya, she experiences a love she never imagined possible, despite Farida's disappointment at not having a grandson. Initially, motherhood gives Isra purpose in her isolated life. Yet as she bears more daughters, all girls, to her in-laws' increasing anger, motherhood becomes overwhelming. Isra moves mechanically through her routines, seeking refuge in books. This ambivalence represents a taboo in her culture, where a woman's value centers on reproduction. When Isra confides to Sarah that motherhood has consumed her identity, she voices a forbidden truth. I was finally starting to feel like a person, like I had a purpose. Sons are celebrated, while daughters are called balwa, affliction. This reflects harsh reality, where sons provide security, while daughters require dowries and protection of their honor. When Nadine has a son while Isra has four daughters, their contrasting treatment becomes painfully clear. The cruelest paradox, in a system where motherhood is a woman's highest calling, female children, future mothers themselves, are met with disappointment. When Sarah urges Isra to leave, Isra cites her lack of resources and support, a realistic assessment, not cowardice. Sarah counters, "If you believe you have no choice, then you don't." This philosophical divide between seeing circumstances as fixed versus believing in change despite obstacles drives the narrative. Daya initially accepts arranged marriage as inevitable, until questioning Farida's justification that this is how it's been done for centuries, with, "Maybe that's why everyone is so miserable," revealing her growing awareness that tradition doesn't justify suffering. Sarah and Isra represent contrasting responses. Sarah chooses freedom at the cost of family connection, while Isra chooses family obligation, sacrificing her autonomy and ultimately her life. Neither path is simple, reflecting the impossible situations women face when cultural expectations conflict with personal desires. The characters demonstrate that even within narrow constraints, recognizing injustice rather than accepting inevitability becomes the first step toward freedom. After reading her mother's letters and confronting her family history, Daya recognizes her resemblance to Isra, yet identifies the crucial difference. She can hear the voice of fear that held her mother back and recognizes it as a lie. This represents the novel's central hope, that awareness of patterns can lead to breaking them. When Daya applies to college despite family disapproval, she's choosing a different path while honoring Isra's unfulfilled dreams. Her ultimatum to Farida, "Marriage can wait. If you don't let me go, then I'll leave," shows how understanding her mother's tragedy has given her courage. Daya standing outside Brooklyn Public Library with her college syllabi embodies this balance. With a scholarship to NYU, she achieves the education her mother was denied while maintaining cultural connections. Progress doesn't require rejecting tradition entirely, but thoughtfully evolving it. The power to tell our own stories, rejecting imposed narratives to craft new ones, honoring both origins and possibilities, is perhaps the most profound freedom. Through this, Daya creates possibility for future generations, continuing what Sarah and Isra began.